Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 166, recorded June 10th, 2013.
Okay, are you ready? Did you pick a greeting?
No, I never pick a greeting until we start recording. I'm so naughty.
Oh, why don't we do Elvish then?
Okay, well, you got to do that one. I don't remember how it goes.
You can say, "Mai govannen."
What does that mean?
Well met.
Mai govannen. There we go.
Yeah. Okay.
That's for any Tolkien fan.
Okay.
So, we have Scott in Fort Worth, Texas today, and Tom in Provo, and Mick in Carnforth in the UK.
Yes, indeed we do. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice full show.
Yes.
Got a lot of good stuff. You know, we've been requesting the myths, so we can bust some myths.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of myth busting going on.
That's hard to say.
Today. And
myth busting.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. So we got some of those.
And yeah, but we also have other things too. So let's.
Is there anything you were going to say before we start?
I'll get into it later, because something Mick has to say relates to what I want to say.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Let's go to Scott first.
Scott in Fort Worth.
In Texas. And he has a funny thing to say. This made me laugh out loud. Like, really, actually, truly laugh out loud, not just type LOL to indicate that it was slightly amusing. He says, "I contacted you a few weeks ago about blueberry shrimp sold by the Bailey brothers. You guys provided great feedback that I really appreciate. Let me assure you, though, that you must have a tremendous audience, because the Bailey brothers have been out of these shrimp ever since, and I have yet to be able to actually buy any."
Well, I don't know if we can claim the fault, but I hope we can.
That would be really cool.
I hope we're giving the Bailey brothers that much business. Why not? That sounds good.
That made me laugh. That was very funny.
And I'm glad you appreciated our feedback.
Yes. And hopefully you get some shrimp soon.
Yeah, hopefully they have some in.
Okay, so he has questions. Question number one, about breeding and raising fish. "I would like to set up 2 to 4 10-gallon tanks solely for breeding and attempt to raise and breed some or all of the following: Epistogrammas, killifish, and German blue rams. I know Epistogramma and killifish represent a large number of species, so I hoped you might identify 2 or 3 of each I could choose from to get started. I should also probably ask if you think a 10-gallon tank is adequate for breeding these guys. With killies, I understand peat moss helps or may be required. If this is true, what would you recommend for the safest peat moss?"
Well, there's a couple things. It does depend on the species. Some species are peat spawners, or substrate spawners, I should say, and one of the most commonly used substrates is peat, because they tend to live in waters that are, you know, a bit soft and acid, and peat is close enough to the sort of whatever natural substrate they would have that they'll use it. They'll dive into it and lay their eggs actually under the substrate.
Peat moss,
mm-hmm,
being moss that grows in peat? Or is it something else? Is it like the actual peat soil that people dig up and use as fuel? Or?
Well, there's the partially decomposed moss, what was once living moss and is now decomposed and is in smaller particles.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's milled peat moss, which is the normal moss that it was either alive when they harvested or recently alive before that and still intact, that is then ground. And then there's the actual moss itself, which may be live or not live or in a state of dormancy that it can sometimes recover from. So there are a lot of different things there. But peat itself is the, when it's actually decomposed to a point, it looks a lot like dirt.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff they dry and
so
use as fuel.
So when he says peat moss here, kind of uh-huh, which of those is he talking about?
Well,
what do people use for the fish?
Actually, people have used more than one of those.
Oh.
And you can use more than one, but I would say the safest one, not Miracle-Gro, not that I have anything against them. I buy some of their products, but they always put stuff in it.
Other stuff?
They put fertilizers and stuff in it.
We don't want
much.
Those.
Let's see, Andreka found a brand. I would say find one that's sold for aquarium use. Be the safest.
Do they just have, like, bags of peat moss
they
at
do.
The
they
fish
have,
store?
They have peat pucks that
peat
are
pucks.
Used for putting in your filter. They have peat moss you can buy online for aquarium use and so on.
Okay, so get it specifically for aquarium use.
Mm-hmm, that would be the safest. And there are different ways to do it. I mean, some of them, you get, like, a butter tub and cut a little hole in it and put some some of the peat down at the bottom and put it in your tank, and the fish will find it and dive into that container and spawn in there and then swim back out. And then it doesn't get all over the tank as much. Mm-hmm. And you can take it out. And, you know, you don't have to put it all over the bottom.
Does it kind of float around and make a mess?
It can do that, yeah. So, but not all killies require it. Some killies are plant spawners. Don't need it at all. I believe...
They could use it, but they can use a plant too? Or they don't spawn actually, the substrate. They spawn up in plants.
Spawn up in plants on the surface and so on. Like the killies that... who's got them? Somebody has them. I know who has them. Tony has them. Tony's
okay.
Got them. Yeah. He's got killies. They're spawning in his Java moss.
Okay.
And they're doing fine. There are lots that are like that. And so I would, not being an expert on killies, I would say you check a little bit into that and see if it's something you want to deal with and look up the substrate spawners and the plant spawners.
So he could find some that
don't need
one,
it.
He could figure out which one he wanted to do.
Right, and I think some are facultative. They can kind of switch between both modes.
Okay.
I would recommend... I didn't want to say that. What I wanted to say is I think the line is roughly drawn. There are the annual killies that tend to be peat spawners, substrate spawners.
What's annual killie?
That typically in the wild live 1 year.
And then they die.
In a captive situation, they usually don't live a whole lot longer, but they can live longer. Yeah, they spawn and then the water dries up shortly thereafter, and that's why they spawn in the substrate. Their eggs,
do they
get
stay
to
moist?
A nearly dry state. They're slightly moist because they're under the soil. They never completely dry out, but they dry out enough that they're not. Mm-hmm. It's not that you wouldn't touch the soil and feel wet anymore on the top anyway. So, and that the line is roughly drawn there, but
between annual killies and what?
And perennial killies. I guess you could call them perennial killies. I don't know that they call them.
You have to replant your killies or not replant your killies.
I don't know that they use the term perennial as much with killies, but they certainly use annual. That would be fun. I would love that. But, and it seems like you are using fairly soft water. There are some killies that actually do well in hard water. Their eggs maybe not so much, like the Nothobranchius killies, like the one I showed you the other day that you liked in the pet store. The little bright, jewelly one in the plant tank there. Fish for you?
I believe you that I liked
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you liked
I don't
it.
Remember.
Anyway, those do quite fine in fairly hard alkaline water as adults.
But he's got soft water?
He's using water that he's keeping fairly soft with low total dissolved solids. Yeah.
So maybe he could get hard water.
So it's easy to make hard water if you want to make hard water.
Right.
It's harder to make soft water. But yeah. So in terms of the epistogrammas, I think they would probably do okay in a 10-gallon. And I've kept rams in a 10-gallon, too. Well, it's been a long time. I think it would work. I don't know that would be necessarily the best for him. I'd have to defer to other aquamaxers out there who've done it. I know that Mick keeps both, and we have several other aquamaxers out there who keep both. And if you have advice for Scott about this tank size, that would be great. So please send it.
Do you have suggestions as to what kind of species mm-hmm. he might think mm-hmm. about using?
He's right in that there are so many, but unfortunately, once again, although I know a little bit about both killifish and epistogrammas, I'm not an expert in either of them, and would rather defer to other aquamaxers. Again,
okay, so
with
send
some
in
species
suggestions,
that would be a good thing if you could help us with that. So let's move on to his next question, and hopefully we'll get some folks who can help him with that one.
Okay, question number 2, water parameters in RO water. I discovered, after losing a lot of relatively expensive fish that I really liked, that I was purchasing poor water for my tank. I have since changed to a different water and want to make sure I didn't move from one bad thing to another kind of bad thing. Please tell me if I'm on the right track. For a 40-gallon family tank, I am using RO water that I buy at about 6.4 pH. The TDS... Okay, tell me what TDS is.
Total dissolved solids.
Okay. The TDS of this water upon purchase is less than 10.
That's really low.
Okay. I add Kent RO right at a quarter of a teaspoon per 10 gallons, the recommended amount for discus. The water I was using was 7.6 pH with TDS of more than 400, which I'm told is insanely high, doubling the TDS in our tap water here, which may be a large contributor to the problems I was having. Okay.
Yeah,
explain to me what he just said in English.
Okay, well, that was English. But basically, he found that the water that he had been purchasing mm-hmm. was really high in total dissolved solids. It had a lot of minerals in it, basically. And so...
Well, but he just said it was less than 10.
No, he's saying right now he's buying RO water that has a fairly low pH, 6.4. It's on the acid side.
Okay. And that's the one very he low switched TDS. To.
Yes, he switched to that one.
The old one had more than 400?
Yeah, 7.6 pH is on the high side. It's not marine water yet, but it's getting high. I mean, it's well above neutral. And the 400 total dissolved solids, 400 parts per million, that's a lot.
Well, that's he was very, buying it like that?
Yeah.
What were they happens, selling it
sometimes
as?
When I don't know, but where he was buying it, or you know, if some stores don't check their water, and they don't flush their RO units, they don't replace their membranes often enough.
So just like backed up or something.
A lot of stores have RO units in their stores, you know, mm-hmm. aquarium stores. I think most of them do a pretty good job of maintaining them, but the thing is, you have a lot of people coming to the store buying water. You have the store using their water in-house. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't keep up with the fact that, oh, we forgot to flush our membranes. And then the water that they're producing is not really a row of water anymore. And there are things like that. Or, you know, somebody said, did you change the... I think Bob changed it. No, Anna was supposed to change it, you know, and things happen.
Okay.
So that I don't know if that's what happened, but it could happen.
He's only using RO water in this 40-gallon tank? He's, like, all 40 gallons is purchased water?
Well, it sounds like it's purchased water, but what he's doing is then adding the RO right, which is, you know, putting enough of the minerals back in. Because if you put fish in water with a TDS of 10, mm-hmm. most fish can't handle it. It will be very bad.
They won't get any minerals
for them.
And stuff.
Right. But,
so he buys 40 gallons of RO water and then adds stuff back in.
Yeah, probably not at once, but I mean,
why not just use some tap water and save some money, and then use some RO water, and then not have to add stuff back in?
You can do that, but it depends on what's in his water. I have the suspicion that his water has some nasty stuff in it that he doesn't like, and that's why he's not using it.
Okay.
Maybe, I mean, 200 parts per million of the total dissolved solids—that's pretty high too. It's not insane, but it's high.
And the old stuff was 400.
Yeah.
Okay, so much for my questions. I will now attempt to finish reading his questions.
Oh, it's good because there's a lot of listeners who probably need to know that.
Okay. The actual pH inside the tank is dropping very slowly from 7.6 pH despite regular water changes. I assume this is because the substrate and other natural decor are so saturated with the stuff from the other water that it's keeping the pH high. Unless you see this as an issue, this is fine with me as I don't really want the pH to drop particularly fast.
Right. Well, it's good to have some buffers, you know, some buffering capacity in your water so you don't get a pH crash too easily. That's good. And it could be that that's what's happening. There are minerals that are dissolved in, you know, they're in the substrate or whatever the other decor is. Or it could be that you have substrate or other decor that is actually already buffering. Like if you had Texas Holy Rock in there, for example, something like that. It could already be buffering the water anyway without any of that stuff. Having precipitated or whatever from the water that he was using.
Okay. So he says, in the end, my goal is for this tank to drop to a pH around 6.5 to 6.8. Once the pH stops going down, I plan to feature 3 to 5 various angelfish along with a school of ember tetras and a couple of pairs of dwarf cichlids. That's about all I plan to have in there, though I've recently come to appreciate having a couple of nerite snails. The tank is and will be heavily planted, so I add dry micros and macros along with Flourish Excel every day. What's dry micros and macros?
Okay, that's a good question. It refers to fertilizers, macros being macronutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, so on, and the micros being the trace elements like boron, molybdenum, all that stuff.
Okay, say that last one again.
Molybdenum. I can't say it right now because you asked me to. Molybdenum.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Okay. He says, I know that's a long narrative about my tank, but I want to make sure I'm on the right track. It seems like every time I learn something new, I find that much of what I thought I knew was actually wrong. I don't want to get my pH down and go spend a bunch of money on nice fish, only to watch them die because I missed something else. It's bad enough to know that I screwed up and killed the fish, but I have to admit it adds another level of frustration when you spent a lot of money for those fish.
It does. There are several levels of frustration, but let me just tell you one thing. The bit about every time I learn something new, I find that much of what I thought I knew was actually wrong. I'm still there. I'm doing that.
I think that's everybody.
Fun. Yep. So don't feel bad. I'm sure there are aquarists who are 10 times more advanced than I am who are saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think that ever goes away.
I think the more you know, the more you know you don't know.
Exactly.
About anything.
And it's here's the thing. A little warning light I want to mention. The tank with the angels, the ember tetras, and the pairs of dwarf cichlids sounds really beautiful, and I'm sure it would be. But the angels, when they get big enough, are going to start eating the ember tetras, I'm almost sure.
How big are ember tetras?
They're not very big. They're diminutive tetras.
Diminutive tetras.
Yes, an angelfish will almost certainly eat them. Eventually. That's true. Now, if you put the ember tetras in and the angelfish are tiny when you put them in, you have a better chance that they might survive because they're just kind of used to them as decor. But I've had plenty of people, you know, heard tons of stories where they try that and then one day everything's fine. The angelfish are big, the ember tetras are small, or the neons or whatever they are, and everybody's happy. And the next day, boom! Lunch.
Angelfish are bigger.
Yeah. Angelfish are chubby and burping. Yeah. So hopefully that doesn't happen, but let's see.
What do you think about the water, though? Is it sounding okay?
Yeah, we need to talk about the water. As long as you can keep the pH stable in that range, around 6.5 to 6.8, I would probably, myself, just tend toward the higher range there, towards 6.8, just for safety. Because you'll probably end up having more buffering capacity if you're at that point. Not necessarily, but as a result of your buffering capacity, if that's what's keeping it up towards the higher range, you're going to be a little bit safer from pH grass. I would probably do that. But I think it sounds pretty good other than that. I just don't want you to have ember tetras that get eaten. I think the opistos and the ember tetras would probably be fine. I wouldn't worry about that.
It's just with the angelfish.
Or you might try some bigger bodied tetras, you know, that end up quite a bit larger, so they can't be
a
mouthful.
Have some that looks, I don't know what ember tetras look like. What color are they?
I've shown them to you. They're quite striking to me. You're talking to a colorblind person, but think of embers.
That's what they look like?
Yeah, they kind of do.
Do they have any of a similar color that are bigger? Different fish?
Not that I can think of. Not exactly. But there are plenty of tetras that have, you know, reddish colors of various kinds that you could go with, maybe. But, hopefully that helps.
Okay.
I hope I'm not missing anything there, either.
He actually has a third question, too, but I think we should take our break because we forgot. So let's take it now.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nelly.
Okay. So, we're going to go to his third question, Scott's third question.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, actually, I just wanted to say I agree with you that fish bowls are ridiculous and should probably be outlawed. After all, nobody would allow you to permanently house a German shepherd in an enclosed garage with no windows and never let him out. This would get you locked up for animal cruelty, yet we allow people to put fish in a bowl and watch them die. That's very true.
Yeah, fish bowls should be reserved for things like wabikusa.
What's that?
That's something for another show, I guess.
What? But it's wabikusa! What's that? You gotta say it in that voice. Wabikusa!
It's basically, you get a ball of, like, moss.
Uh-huh.
And, like, peat moss.
Uh-huh.
And you plant plants in it. Emergent plants, usually. Plants that can
live like
on land. And then you keep, like, an inch of water in the bottom of the fishbowl, and you put this little ball of moss
and
the little plants spread out from the ball, you know, grow out, and it looks really cool.
See, that's what and must be what they're
arts.
For.
And
or to keep pennies
without
in.
Without any fish. Yeah, see that.
Or.
That's, yeah.
You know, something decorative, but.
There you go.
Not live critters.
Especially not goldfish.
Yeah. We actually have a somewhat pretty betta, certainly not the most beautiful I've ever seen, but he's earned our respect. We purchased him because he had been thrown into a community tank and looked about as miserable as a fish could look. We had him in a bowl for a while, but in no time the water just looked terrible. It didn't take long before I gave up on the bowl. We now have him in a small 2-gallon desktop aquarium with good filtration. It has actually taken him a while to be able to swim through the mild current created by the filter, but he is finally gaining strength and doing much better. Is he okay by himself, or are there any small tank mates you might recommend?
Well, he's certainly okay by himself. It won't be a problem to keep him by himself. And I wouldn't put any other fish in the 2-gallon for sure. You might try... Well, olive nerites. You like olive nerites, right? He was mentioning that before. Olive nerites work well. Tiger nerites, zebra nerites.
Good for algae crew.
Yeah, the betas that I have at work have, let's see, zebra and tiger nerites in with them. They do great. And they're perfect algae crew. I have had limited success with shrimp if there's a lot of plant cover, like red cherry shrimp.
Will eat them.
But it's limited. You know, like the 5-gallon I have at work, the shrimp... Actually, there's a reproducing population that's been in there for 3 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it perpetuates itself, but you never see more than one or two shrimp at a time, and they're always quite furtive.
They're hiding.
Yeah. So I would say in such a small tank, an olive nerite maybe, that'd be about it.
Okay. And he has a myth that needs busting.
Okay, cool.
He says, please destroy the 1-inch per gallon rule. It's time for this myth to die.
Yeah. You know, for that class that I hope I'll be teaching
mm-hmm.
on the aquarium success, I've been preparing some slides to deal with problems like this.
Mm-hmm.
And for the slide about this, the 1-inch of fish per gallon, I show 10 neons that are 1-inch long each.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, okay, this might work. You have a nice cycled tank, you put 10 neons in it, it's 10 gallons, 1 inch of fish per gallon, okay. But the rule breaks down really fast because it put 2-inch fish in the tank. Now, how much has the mass increased of the fish?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and show them how much more fish is actually in the tank. And then I put 1 10-inch fish in
ooh,
the
then can't even turn around.
And to talk about how much the mass has increased for that 1 10-inch fish. And it's, you know, so much bigger than 10 neons. It's bigger than 100 neons. You know, it's huge
mm-hmm.
in terms of its bio load and its mass. And so that is a very good point. The 1 inch of fish per gallon rule only holds up when the fish are tiny, when they are only about an inch long,
mm-hmm.
is about as long as it works. And maybe between 1 and 2 inches, it kind of works. But after that, it completely breaks down. Doesn't work at all. So, a very good point.
That's a good myth to be busted.
I'm glad you brought mm-hmm. that up.
So those are all very good questions.
They are indeed.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, let's go to Mick.
Okay.
He says, I had another batch of bronze cori eggs this week. Just the occasional unfertilized one, but this morning, fry aplenty hatched out. This is the second batch from the same fish in 2 weeks.
They are prolific indeed.
Second fish.
Indeed.
I have been thinking of some of the preconceived ideas I hear from people who come into the shop and thought I would send them in.
Oh, wait just a second.
Oh, wait.
I just want to backtrack for a second.
Okay.
He sent some pictures of the quarries.
Oh, okay.
So check them out on the show page. You've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
He got a big batch of eggs up against the wall of the tank. And he's got some fry in his hatching tray. They're cute little quarries. I love them. And then he's got a picture of the parents.
Mm-hmm.
So check it out. And I got to say this. I've kept corys before. I've always loved corys. In fact, 2 of my first fish were corys, pygmy corys, that I got when I was like 10, 9, whatever, however mm-hmm. old I was. And I loved those things. And I've kept corys several times since then, and they've spawned for me, not on purpose. I wasn't trying to spawn them, but they produced eggs, but the eggs were never in a situation where particularly worked out, so they never grew up. But I've just lately been thinking about it and thinking, why don't I spawn corys? I haven't done it yet. That's kind of ridiculous.
Why don't we?
I mean, on purpose, you know, try mm-hmm. to spawn and raise them rather than just have them spawn in the tank and say, oh, look, eggs. Oh, look, somebody ate them. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I have purchased some pygmy corys to go with my dwindling school because I've had a school of pygmy corys that I haven't been breeding. Just had them for several years, and they've been kind of, you know, dwindling off. And now, my small school, I now have 4 of them, and I've just purchased 10 more, which should be arriving in the mail very soon. And with that school, I should be able to produce some babies. I'm going to do it. Going to make the attempt anyway. I'm going to try the colony breeding first.
What's colony
breeding? Where basically you just keep a whole bunch there together, and you don't remove eggs or remove parents, and just see if they'll
just see what happens. Babies.
And a lot of people have success with it, so I'm going to try that. If that doesn't work out, I'll probably, you know, do some dedicated breeding setup to get them to breed first, and then maybe do that colony breeding after that, incidentally, mm-hmm. if it works. But first of all, I just want to try that and see how it works in the planted tank in our room.
Well, fun.
It sounds fun.
And we've been wanting to put something in there because there's nothing in the water column.
Yeah, exactly. There's all the creatures are down at the bottom. So these quarries, unlike many other quarries, the dwarf quarries don't just stay at the bottom. They hover in the water column quite a bit. So okay. And they school quite tightly, and it's an attractive thing. So I'm looking forward to that. And I think it was partly Mick who inspired it, talking about his breeding quarries. So thank you, Mick.
Okay, so his myths, I love his title. I feel like we need those cop shows, mm-hmm. you know, those announcer voices with the sound effects.
Oh, okay.
For his little title here. So here, you're good at voices. You can read it.
Try it? Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go. Russ and Kelly busting aquarimyths to the max, max, max.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. And then we need some sirens and a jail door closing.
There you go. Maybe I can add that in after.
Yeah.
Post-production.
Okay. Okay. Here's myth number one. Goldfish are easier to keep than tropicals, and they don't need such a big tank.
That's definitely a myth. I love that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Wow.
Not only just a bowl, but don't keep a goldfish in a 10-gallon tank. Don't keep them in a 20-gallon tank, really. They need a pretty big mm-hmm. tank. I know that we're kind of pushing the envelope with ours. And they're nearly 40-gallon
tank. We've got two and 39-gallon.
It's almost 40s.
Tank.
Gallons, yeah. And they're doing okay, but yeah, it's kind of tight.
Mm.
So yeah, it's very true.
Okay, you can put several goldfish in a tank that has been filled up from the tap the same or the next day.
Nope.
Somebody
really.
Needs to get slapped over that one.
Yeah. Not if you want live goldfish. If you want dead goldfish, you can, I guess.
I know what kind of goldfish they're talking about.
Which kind?
You
crackers?
Know. Oh, that would work, too. But you remember that one that you guys... Okay. I got to tell you guys a story. The apartment that I was living in when Russ and I were dating, there were, four other girls living in the apartment. It was, a three-bedroom apartment. So, one of them, maybe I shouldn't say her name.
You can say her first name.
Giovanna. She's from Sicily. She's gorgeous. This little Sicilian woman who danced Latin ballroom and everything. But anyways, Russ brought in this little, desktop, one of those, little hex tanks, I think it was.
Something like that.
And he put this little rubber, toy rubber goldfish.
Tiny Winnie carnivals.
Yeah, looking thing.
Just a toy.
Down in the bottom with a little
with some gravel and a little plant.
Decorations and stuff. And it had, you know, these big black eyes painted on it. And
it was like a, what was it? Like a calico moor or something.
Uh-huh. It was orange.
Or was it orange?
Yeah, it was orange. It just had these big black eyes. Like a fancy goldfish, just this little rubber thing in it, you know, so it just sat there on the bottom of the gravel, but the tank was running and everything, and Giovanna totally thought it was real, and she would just say to Russ, "That thing is creeping me out. It's just it never moves. It just stares at me while I walk around the room."
That's
so
funny.
That kind of goldfish you can put in a tank the same day you fill it up.
That's the only kind.
Yeah. Okay. Myth number three, you don't need to change water when you have a filter.
That's like saying you don't need to flush your toilet when you close the lid.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Change the water. Okay.
Yeah.
It is best to change all of the tank water and give it a good clean out every few months.
I always cringe when people tell me that. I just cleaned the tank out. I can't understand what's going on. All the fish are starting to die. Well, all your poor bacteria just went down the tubes, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Very good. Good one.
There's no difference between cheap and more expensive foods except the packaging.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah. Well, not all fish meal is created equal.
With human grocery store shampoo. Maybe not true with fish food.
Yeah. Well, fish food, you look at the ingredients, and you see ones that have just fish meal as the first ingredient, and then they have all these grain products as the second, third, fourth, and fifth ingredients. That's telling you something.
Yeah, it's like cat food and dog food, that the main ingredients are...
Starchy fillers. Grain-based ones,
carnivores.
It's the same with fish. Really, you don't want a whole lot of... You need some...
People shouldn't eat them either.
Yeah, it's very true. If you find a fish food that the first three or four ingredients are like, it says things like squid meal or prawn meal, you know, it's giving you actual, or not just the generic fish meal. Mm-hmm. It's telling you things like that, and it has plant-based like spirulina or kelp meal, things like that, you know, it's good stuff. You know, it's better stuff. And if you have a lot of grain-based fillers after just generic fish meal, it's not as good.
What kind of grains do they put? They put like...
They use like wheat byproducts and rice byproducts.
What does it even mean, byproducts? Like, it's not even the real grain. It's like...
The dust
left on the floor after they grind up the wheat or something, along with all the dust bunnies.
Yeah, and it's useful for in the standpoint that it binds the food together, which, you know, you don't want food just falling into pieces, but it's a cheap way to do it, and it's not necessarily the best way.
Very healthy. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's the next one. Ponds don't need a filter, especially if there are a few plants.
Yeah, that's generally not the case either. Good point.
Excuse me.
You can run into a lot of problems. I know if you have a huge natural pond and a few fish in it, that's one thing, but I know he's talking about, you know, you want a nice looking aquascape pond. It makes a big difference.
Okay, next one. UV clarifier bulbs don't need replacing every 9 to 12 months as long as you can still see the light.
And they're just like fluorescent bulbs in that the visible light that they emit may not be much different after a certain period of time. But the actual useful light does dissipate and drops off sharply after that. You know, starts dropping off immediately, but it's quite slowly for a few months, and then after about, you know, 6 months, it speeds up, and by the time you're to a year, very little of that light that's coming out is actually doing anything useful.
Okay, so change the light bulbs.
Yep.
You can mix fancy goldfish and tropicals if the tank is big enough.
That is... that's a very good one. Most... I don't know any serious goldfish fancier. I don't know of any, and I may be wrong.
It's like it would look weird.
Well... You know, the fish might not actually attack each other, and some of them will, certainly. Mm-hmm. Some of them will fight. But that's usually not the issue. Usually the issue is that the fish have completely different needs in terms of temperature, food requirements, that kind of thing. And so even if the fish are completely peaceful with each other, they're not going to be long-term.
Because tropicals, you know. I mean, if it's tropical, that means it's come from someplace tropical, which means the water is warm.
Right. And really warm water is not good for goldfish. Warm fish. They're really cool water fish. They're happy at around 70. Mm-hmm. And you get a whole lot above that, a whole lot below that, and, you know.
They're not so happy anymore.
They're not as happy. I mean, they can be dormant in cooler water, but yeah, it doesn't work, so that's a good point.
Okay, next one. Guppies make good first fish for a tank to cycle.
I can't think of any fish that make a good tank. Good fish.
What's your favorite thing to put in to make it cycle?
Ammonium chloride.
So nothing alive!
Nothing alive, exactly. So, yeah, I totally agree with Mick. Guppies are not a good first fish to cycle with, and I can't really think of any that are. I know there's some that can survive it, but once I started fishless cycling, I never went back.
Go back to the dark side.
No.
Okay, last one. Fish only grow to the size of the tank, don't they?
No.
I can hear your customers like asking these things, Mick. This is an awesome list.
It is. No, I've seen fish, especially plecos. They're one of the obvious counterexamples of you walk into somebody's house and they have a 10-gallon tank in the corner and you don't see anything in there at first, and then you see that the piece of driftwood is actually a pleco. Yeah.
Folded in half because he doesn't fit in the tank.
Stretching all the
anymore.
Way across the tank twice.
Yeah.
Just about. And yeah, it's very true. There are many examples that demonstrate that fish do not grow to the size of the tank. Mm-hmm. There are many other factors that dictate their growth.
Alrighty, that was a good
great,
list.
Great points.
Anything okay. else you need? Oh, wait, where's Tom and Provo? He's not on the
we
paper
We do have
here.
Tom and Provo. Did he get pasted in the wrong spot?
You didn't paste
oh,
him.
Oh, maybe he's just over here. Oh.
Maybe he got cutted, but he didn't get pasted.
Here he is, right okay. here.
He says, Russ and Kelly, I finally found time to add live plants to my tank, and at least until they all die, I'm quite happy with the new look.
That's a nice optimistic way to look at it.
I'll be happier still when all artificial items are gone. I always feel something of a cheat using plastic plants. True, plastic has the advantage of not dying, but only because it is not living in the first place.
I love that.
This is very good. The new flora consists of Anubias, Java fern, and frog bit. I also noticed a very small lump of Java moss, presumably a hitchhiker, sitting on the substrate this morning.
Yay, that's how I got my first
Hooray.
Aquatic moss.
I will let it grow and see what happens. One of the Java fern leaves was detached from the main plant, but with tiny new plants growing from the underside. I believe this is very common in Java fern.
Excuse me.
Bless you, but I've included a photo anyway. I also added an assassin snail to help control pond snails in the tank. It promptly disappeared, but is, I presume, lurking in there somewhere. Do assassin snails use some sort of venom on their prey, or simply slurp them from the shell, relying on the legendary slowness of gastropods? The fish store clerk said that he got an odd sensation retrieving the snail bare-handed from the tank, and that after he bagged it, his hand itched. Seems questionable, but still possible. For things people believe but are not true, I nominate the water in my aquarium is clear, so it must be healthy for the fish. That's a good one.
That is a really good one. Let's go in reverse order and talk about those.
Okay.
The water in my aquarium is clear, so it must be healthy for the fish. Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that one up, because if the water can be chock full of ammonia to deadly levels and be clear as crystal. So, very good point. Assassin snails, let's talk about that. I've heard some things about assassin snails and venom, but I don't know. I can neither confirm nor deny any reports of
anybody
such things.
Anybody done any scientific research?
Not that I am aware of. I've only heard
Have
of...
Have they done any anti-scientific research?
Well, I've heard of anecdotes of people saying they it looks like they're paralyzing my red cherry shrimp or something. I've never seen anything like that. They seem to thrive together in my experience, red cherry shrimp and assassin snails. I don't know. To me, when I see them attack things, attack snails or whatever, it just looks like they start eating
just
them.
Just eating it.
But it's hard to tell. You know, they are kind of small. And they are related, albeit perhaps somewhat distantly, to some of the snails that have venom. There are snails that do. Like, remember the cone shells we'd see in Hawaii once in a while?
Mm.
Usually just see the shells on the beach.
Oh.
But I think I saw one or two when we were diving, too. But
and those are venomous?
Yes, very. They can kill people.
Oh, well, I'm glad I didn't see them then.
Yeah, so it's not without the realm of possibility. There are venomous snails out there, so I'm not sure. But, yeah, I wish I knew. If there's anybody who knows of any research that exists on that, please let us know, and maybe I can look and see what I can find. Mm-hmm. But it'd be interesting to know. I have captured assassin snails with my hands. I did so today, and felt nothing. But that doesn't mean a whole lot.
But you are
it?
Kind of like a superhuman with semi-mutant powers.
You're not supposed to tell people about my secret identity.
Sorry. I doubt our arch-villains listen to our podcast. They wouldn't be the kind to keep fish.
That's probably true. Okay. Well, yeah, that's an interesting point to bring up. We'll see what we can find about that.
And congratulations on your new plants.
Yeah. I'm really glad about the moss in particular, because I love the fact that happened to me when I was about 13, and I just, you know, had that moss for years and loved that stuff. The Java ferns, like you said, the tiny new plants growing from the underside of the leaf, that is very common when a leaf is detached. In fact, if you want a particular plant to propagate, you can just rip a leaf off and let it float in the water, and it'll start growing little plantlets.
Neat.
It's kind of a survival mechanism, because each of those little plantlets has a chance.
Kind of like plant flatworms.
Mm-hmm. And that frog bit, that stuff can grow like crazy when it's in a good situation, but it's not like duckweed. You know, but it's a good plant. All of these are great plants, so hopefully they go well. And please check out Tom's pictures.
Yes, he sent pictures of the tank.
Yeah, check him out on the show page. You can see it. I like what he's done with it, with the tank. And we'll look forward to seeing updates as the plastic plants are gradually replaced by the inexorable march of botanical wonders, or whatever. I don't know. I'm just coming up with this as I go along. But seeing his plants grow, that's basically what I meant to say.
That's okay. I think we got that.
Yeah.
All right, folks.
May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.